You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
Flesh and bone, now touch the silicone. She's touch, smell sight.
Folks, have a little listen to this song. I'm telling you, it gets into you. You can't shake it. Everyone knows this song. And the guy behind it is coming up next, Tal Bachman. And we're going to talk about Droogle. If that confuses you, you may want to stay tuned. We'll explain it in a moment. You know, I often wonder if Tal gets sick of coming under the shadow of this song, but I don't know. If I was Tal, I don't know how... I don't know. I get sick of a lot of things pretty easily, but this is a good tune, which is why it did him so good and earned him a Juno along the way. Tal, how you doing, man?
All right, how are you?
Your reaction when people intro you to an interview with that song all the time is?
Oh, you know. I'm kind of used to it. I can't complain about that. That's been a good 3 minutes for me.
It has been a good 3 minutes for you. Yeah, well done. No, it really is. I mean, I know there's a lot of schmaltz out there, but I don't know. There's a resonance and a stickability that comes with that song. So good on you is what I'm trying to say. So
thanks, I appreciate that.
When was the last time?
What is going on with you?
Oh, come on! Can I not just ask you about you? Why do you always have to ask me about me?
Because I'm here for you, Drew. We're here to talk about you and your problems and your childhood and your trauma.
Oh, that is killer.
I need to hear about the resentment, the anger.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Allen. Thank you. Thank you very much. How's Mia? So, I'm going through a little crisis there, folks. Let me set this up properly here. See, he and I always get into it before we get into it. After 7 seasons as host of Canada's most listened to spiritual talk show, Drew Marshall announced to his listeners that he's no longer convinced there's a God. As far as we know, this will be the first time a host on a Christian station has openly admitted to a crisis of faith, at least publicly, and kept their job. So, from now until our Christmas show, December 18th, I'm going to speak to a variety of prominent people during each show, yes, you're prominent, Tal, and ask them why they believe in God and if they've ever had a legitimate personal encounter with him. Today's guest is Tal Bachman. Tal used to be a Mormon, and then he looked into it and said, eh. So, where are you at with God now? Have you bought into it again? Have you totally quit on God or just Mormonism? I mean, we've talked about this before, so let's bring everyone up to speed.
Don't try to turn the tables on me, Drew. Okay, as a psychiatrist, Well, again, I mean, I want to be here for you, so we really want to spend a lot of time talking about me. But
in a nutshell,
I would say that, I guess I appreciate religious faith. I certainly am not an atheist, and I think there may be something big out there, like some creative force, but I couldn't say that I was a believing Christian or anything like that.
No.
Although I have lots of Christian friends and lots of Mormon friends, too.
Okay, so you're... I want a label, man. Just let me hang a stinking label on you.
Boy.
Are you a reluctant agnostic?
I suppose so, but... I mean, I don't know. I don't know if we've talked about this before, but... I mean, agnostic sort of implies indifference, and I would never say that I'm indifferent. If there were a God, I would love to know about it. I would love to meet him or it or she or they or whatever.
So you're an anxious agnostic.
I don't know how to put a label on myself. I don't see any reason to conclude that there is no God. Okay.
Yes.
So because that is the case, I would say it's probably more likely than not that there is some sort of creative force out there. And I don't really know what else to say other than that to describe where I am.
All right. So if you've just tuned in, folks, and you've never heard this show before, I've labeled my new search for God Droogle. You see how quick we are? See how sharp we are with that?
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks.
Did your like, showbiz manager come up with that? It's going to be like a, you know, it's like, Drew, I love what you're doing with this whole atheism thing. We could make a mint off of this. We call it Droogle. We sell it. We package it, baby. It's new. It's huge. It's now. You're in there with Dennett, Hitchens, Harris, Awesome guy.
Oh, you're killing me.
Yeah,
absolutely
huge
killing me.
For you. We'll get you on Larry King, baby.
Now that was fun talking to him, because there's a guy who is an agnostic.
Did you talk to him?
Yeah, Larry was on the show a few months back, and he, you know, I mean, here's a great combination. He grew up in a Jewish family. Mm-hmm. He is an agnostic who's married to a Mormon.
Is he still married to her?
Yeah, they stayed together. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, back to me. Do you think it's unreasonable for me to have this big ask for Christmas? All I want for Christmas is an encounter with God?
Well, I don't know. I mean, good luck with that. I'm probably killing this show right now because I'm taking all your questions very seriously. I don't have all these packaged, glib responses like, you know, you probably would need on radio.
Yeah.
If I were a believer, I would say, well, now you're kind of imposing conditions on God. You're trying to stipulate and, you know, demand that he kind of communicate with you in your way, and you need to let God communicate to you in his way or her way, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, if this is a real thing for you, and all of a sudden you're going through this serious doubt, I mean, showbiz aside, I'm presuming that's true, right?
Yes, yeah, come on. I'm surprised, and I think what this is revealing about our culture is that we really don't trust the media, because we've been screwed over so many times. But I got a phone call from Diane Cannon, 1:30 in the morning last week, and she said to me, the voicemail, because I couldn't get to it, because I was a little groggy, Drew, what's this all about? Is this just a for ratings, or is this for real? Because if it's for real, I'm going to spank you. You can keep your pants on, but I'm going to spank you. Thank you,
okay.
Diane Cannon.
Yeah. I mean, rewind the clock 35 years, and I'm signing up for that.
Oh, you are brutal. Thank you.
She was a looker in her day.
Yeah. I really hope she's not listening right now.
Okay, can I ask you a couple of questions?
Please, yes, do.
Are you attending a church right now?
No.
When is the last time that you regularly attended church?
Man, that's a great question. I think it would be over a year ago.
Okay. Is that because it bores you? Because why? What's the reason?
Well, I guess hindsight, Tal, I look back on it now and I realize that what I was doing, maybe subconsciously or consciously, I'm not quite sure, is I've been stripping away the tribal conditioning. Because once that gets stripped away, I want to know if what I believe is really true. And I can't know that what I'm believing in is really true if I'm being propped up by tribal conditioning.
Okay. All right. Oh, boy. Okay, so this is going to be
what?
A tough one.
That was a good answer.
That's a very... Well, no, I understand that answer because, I mean, we're cut from the same cloth in that respect. And what has been difficult for me is this. I mean, there's always these kind of two questions in my mind anyway. What is true and what is useful? And you wanted to know what was true. So you're kind of like trying to divest yourself of, you know, conditioning, as you put it, you know, to find out what you believe is true.
Yeah.
And like, you know, honestly, like, what is true, maybe to put it better, what is a warranted belief is not necessarily, you know, good for you.
Huh?
You know?
Say that again.
Okay. I mean, to believe only in, like, empirically warranted things,
yeah,
may not necessarily be good for you.
No.
Because after all, you can sort of like try to like detach yourself from yourself, which is kind of what I did, and really look hard at your beliefs and say like, how much of this is really adding up? Are there internal contradictions? Is there data that just explodes some of my beliefs about the world, religious beliefs, but about the world? But I guess my concern is, and what you may struggle with, just to give you a little bit of a heads up about this, if you've experienced it already, is that you can't actually, like, unbecome yourself. You still are the culmination of thousands of years of, like, neural religious hardwiring. You are wired to be a member of a tribe. And more than that, you're wired to be a member of a tribe which is united around shared beliefs and values.
Yeah, okay, I can see that. So are you saying this Lone Ranger thing isn't going to last? I'm going to eventually join some tribe, and it might be wackier than the one I just came from?
That may happen, but, but, like, you know, I guess what I'm saying is, like, you know, if that doesn't, there's going to, you know, there may be a whole new crisis for you in that leaving that community of believers may result in you not having very deep, primal, real, social, emotional, spiritual needs met. And that may create a kind of hollowness inside of you. Not that I'm speaking from personal experience.
Oh, yeah, whatever.
Like
what? No, and that's it's exactly
what my friend tells
yeah.
me.
Your friend Woody. And that's why I've got you on, Tal, because you've done this. I mean, just to bring everyone else up to speed, Tal grew up in the Mormon family, then came to a point where he said, hold on a second, I got to really take a hard look at this. And I mean, he just didn't grow up in it. He was hardcore. You were Mr. Mormon, right?
Contrary to what you may read on these really terrible blogs,
yes.
I don't know who writes these things or makes up these stories, but I can honestly say that I was the most devout Mormon that I think I ever could have been, and I think them to the people that knew me had ever known.
Right.
I got married young. We had a kid every year. I had all the callings. I have hundreds of Mormon books, certainly more than these guys who are still in the Mormon church, that are always taking shots at me that don't seem to know, like, diddly squat about Mormonism. So, yeah, I approached Mormonism, I immersed myself in Mormonism with a kind of pathological intensity unfathomable to most human beings.
Right, right. Okay, all right. Thanks for clearing that up.
So I had to get that off my chest. Obviously, there's a little bit of baggage here.
Apparently. Yeah, sorry. But you've done this, I'm walking away from this now. And what did walking away look like? And specifically, what I want to know, Tal, is what kind of rubber band mechanisms were still in place that were pulling you back? Anything?
Mm.
And because you just mentioned this void of community kind of deal, right?
Yeah. Well, just the things that I mentioned. I mean, it's not like... So, okay, so you realize that, like, Joseph Smith, will say, was not a reliable source of information about his experiences. Or we come to the conclusion that maybe there's no good reason to believe some of the Christian claims. You know, like I said before, like, you know, that still doesn't mean that you're not hardwired to belong to a community of believers or
right.
something. And something transcendental, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, so you're not just talking about joining the Lions Club.
Not necessarily, although that would help.
Thanks.
I'm serious. That would help. I mean, obviously, like, I found a certain solace joining a rugby club. That was my, like, me diving headfirst into the abyss and, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Literally.
Kind of I mean, that's, like, as close to a surrogate religion as as I've come
surrogate. That's so interesting. A surrogate religion. That's hilarious. Okay,
there are a lot of parallels.
All right, so have you ever had an encounter with God? I mean, a legitimate, and I use that term condescendingly, a legitimate encounter with God.
I certainly believed so at the time, and I wouldn't rule it out now. It's like, you know, when you pray for something and you're really intense and, you know, you're really sincere, you really pray, and that prayer is answered in a way that is, like, completely, not just unexpected, but, like, totally implausible. And it's answered very specifically.
Have you had that?
Yeah.
Okay, tell me. Can you tell me?
Well, I've had a number of experiences like that.
Oh, you suck. I haven't had one of those, and you've had a number. Thanks.
Well, I feel for you. I mean, it's a cool thing when it happens, particularly when it reinforces your desire to believe that you're in the one true faith community.
Right.
And of course, like everybody in every faith community, when they have those experiences, which I'm sorry about you, but most people will have those kinds of experiences. And whether it's like, psychological thing or real thing, another question. But, you know, when you're in a faith community and you have an experience like that, it is taken, it can't help but be taken by you as confirmation that you are in the right way and that these people who you consider your brothers and sisters really are your brothers and sisters at a, like a cosmic, you know, this weird cosmic DNA level.
Yeah.
You are united into one, and that's a really enriching thing.
Okay. Tell me about one. Give me the best one. Don't waste my time with little prayer things. I want to know big one.
Okay. Well, just off the top of my head, once I went to a youth conference.
See, these kind of scenarios usually are with people who are under 25 and they're emotionally vulnerable.
Searching searching college students.
Yes. Yes.
Well, gee, I could come up with one that happened afterwards, but
It's not as cool as this one. Yeah, okay.
Okay, well, just in a nutshell, I went to a youth conference. I was sitting in a pew. We'd had a very kind of spiritually intense, enriching weekend with all the kids there. And the kids sort of one by one were getting up to, express their faith or share their testimonies. Okay? Now, the chapel was completely full. There were hundreds of kids in the chapel, and I was sitting on a pew. And I really was feeling it. And I really wanted to get up and share my testimony. But I couldn't quite make myself do it. I was too shy. And so I started to silently pray to myself, and I said, Heavenly Father, please, I don't know what it could be, but let something big out of the blue happen that will kind of give me that spur to get up there and share my testimony. And I prayed. Went on for maybe 2 minutes, and out of the blue, one of the leaders at the back of the chapel got up out of his seat, walked all the way up the aisle, got to my aisle, shuffled in, tapped me on the shoulder, leaned down, and said, it's your turn. And then he walked up to the front and sat down.
Why would he do that?
Well?
Did you and him have a little pre-chapel discussion about how?
No, nothing like that. I don't know that he really even knew who I was.
You hadn't written She's So High yet?
No, I was 15.
Okay. I'm just checking. So if that was God, do you now look back on that and go and poo-poo it? Do you go, eh?
No. I cherish that experience. I don't take it as confirmation that Joseph Smith always told the truth about his experiences.
Right.
He clearly did not.
No.
But maybe at that time in my life, that's something that I really needed. And, like, I got through, maybe God was communicating to me in a way that I would understand at that time and that I needed. And certainly I got through my high school period. I never smoked once. I never drank. I never have taken a drug. I've never smoked to this day. I mean, I did pretty well. So,
man,
who knows?
All right. So, I think we've covered it, but you're such an intriguing person to talk to, because you are out there in front of me on a journey that I'm sort of, like, I'm kind of at where you were at, and yet I don't, like, William Lovedell, I spoke to him a while ago. He's the former religion reporter for the LA Times. He wrote the book, Losing My Religion. And I'm very intrigued by people who have, a journey of leaving whatever tribe it is. Because I think it just is such a huge transition. It's overwhelming. And let me tell you, it has been exhausting. I wish I'd kept my freaking mouth shut about this. Because,
or your mind closed.
Or my mind, exactly. Because, dude, I'm telling you, the sleep patterns haven't been the greatest.
I know. Well, okay. I sympathize with you, and I don't know if your reaction was anything like mine, but I got to tell you, like, my first couple of weeks after that final penny drop, like, it was really genuinely terrible. I felt like vomiting. I kept bursting into tears. It was horrible. It was like my entire life had imploded. It felt like that. My entire world had imploded. Let me lay a couple of things on you, if I may.
Please.
You're talking about leaving a tribe. You can be honest or not, whatever. I am presuming that you believe it's wrong to murder, right?
I mean, I have teenagers, so, there's got to be a caveat there somewhere.
Okay. You believe it's wrong, I presume, to murder.
How about really, really late-term abortion? Is that okay?
Well,
sorry. There's the boundary. Okay. I just stepped over it. Okay, go on.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Okay, stealing. I'm presuming you would think it's wrong to commit adultery and hurt your spouse. What I'm trying to get at is, like, one way to look at this, one thing to lay on the table is, I would bet that you still share a lot of the values and beliefs as your old faith community.
Oh, very much so. As a matter of fact, okay. I've said, if I'm going to jump into the, and I actually, the thing that stands up for this interview right now so far, Tal, is when you said, no, agnosticism presumes indifference. And you're right. I'm not indifferent about this. I'm frustrated by it.
It's like this aching, searching, like, where are you?
Yes.
Where are you? You know, like, I don't want to play a psychological trick on myself.
No. I'm not into new math. And, you know, every time we talk about God showing up, people say, well, that's not the way God rolls. He'll do it in a tricky kind of way.
I know. Well, the other thing, okay, we're digressing a little bit, but the other thing is like, one of the things C.S. Lewis said once is, maybe I'm taking it out of context, but maybe like, it sounds like a cliche, but maybe there's something to it. Maybe he really is, or it really is all around us. And we're just sort of like, so used to everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're so used to this, like, literally an infinite complexity to nature, to life, and all of its manifestations that we kind of can't really, it's all around us. And maybe we can't recognize it, like a fish can't really tell that it's wet because all it's ever known is water. Maybe that's the C.S. Lewis thing.
Yeah.
Maybe it's all around us. But what I was going to say is, like, so maybe, just something to consider, maybe you consider participating to some degree with a faith community based on, like, you know, 50 to 90% agreement on, like, values.
Right.
And you kind of, like, put aside a creedal difference. You're married, right?
Yes.
I was going to say, like, because I think Christian girls are, on the whole, a lot better than pagan girls. I mean, like,
what the heck? Where did that come from?
Well, it may sound superficial, but like, I mean, well, I have had, unfortunately, and not by my choice, but an estranged wife for some time.
Yes.
Who has, I think it's fair to say, had a far more difficult time outside of Mormonism even than I've had.
Right.
And so I've kind of started to look around because, like, ending in divorce as we speak.
Dude, you're going to end up with a Jesus girl, and she's going to win you over to the Lord.
Well, you know, I don't know about that, but I mean, like, you go out on, like, you know, enough dates with these girls, and, you know, or, like, hang around with these people, and it's like, you know, bones and safety pins through their cheeks, and, like, you know, tattoos, and, like, aborting your babies, and like.
Wait, we're not talking about the Jesus girls right now, are we?
No, I'm talking about, like, pagan girls.
Oh, right,
like,
okay.
It's like. Oh, anyway, it's like I just want to, like I actually asked somebody who's a very devout Christian a couple of weeks ago, like, what church in this town has the hottest chick? He actually gave me the name of what.
That's even funnier that he had a name ready for you.
He had a name ready. Anyway, I guess that's not really consideration for you, at least. And hopefully it never will be.
Yeah, no, I hope not. No, but you bring up an interesting point, man. We'll probably need to finish off with this.
Yeah.
I have come to a point where I'm pretty sure now. See, I'm hedging now that I want to be married, not because of the kids. I want to be married because I want to be married.
Yeah.
And that means my kids are a certain age now where the God thing comes into it as well, because there's a certain span where I was putting on shelf my massive doubts because I didn't want to mess with my kids' spiritual life. You know, I wanted the Christian family. But now they're of the age where they can do whatever the heck they want to do kind of spiritually. And now I got to decide whether I want to be a Jesus guy because I want to be a Jesus guy, not because of the kids.
I understand that.
You know what I mean?
I totally know what you mean. Yeah, boy, there's a lot to consider here. Okay, I know we got to wrap up here, Drew.
Yeah.
A couple other things. Have you read the Nicholas Wade book?
No.
The Faith Instinct?
By the way, I will put it down on my list, but I can't read any books on this until after Christmas because I don't want to be negotiated into this.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Okay, well...
Hold on. Nicholas Cage wrote a book?
No, Nicholas Wade.
Oh, sorry.
Not Nicholas Cage. Nicholas Cage hasn't done anything worthwhile since Raising Arizona, okay?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
We can all agree. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, The Faith Instinct by Nicholas Wade, very interesting book if you want to kind of get a deeper insight into some of the things we've talked about in this interview.
Okay.
What
was the other thing? You said you got a couple things.
I don't even know. Who knows anymore?
Who knows? Who cares? Does Woody have anything to say?
A lot. I don't know. Anyway, I wish I had more answers for you. I mean, I'm so sort of like, I sort of like, in a way, long to believe so desperately that, as I mentioned briefly to you, I grabbed my little brother and we flew to Lynchburg, Virginia this past summer in character as believers and went to a church and performed some of the gospel hymns that we'd written. And the entire congregation sang along with us. And I got to say, I mean, I said to the pastor, I was like, okay, I'll be straight up. We're not believers, but we wrote these songs as though we were. And if you're okay with that, like, no. we can be believers for this Sunday. And so we did it. You want to hear a little verse before we go?
Please, please.
This is one we wrote. Can you hear my guitar?
Yeah, got it.
Okay, I broke my finger playing rugby, so I can't really play that well. I've got like two fingers.
Okay.
Down to two fingers, but it goes a little something like this. Oh, the Nazarene, oh, the Nazarene is always walked with me wherever I've been, whether near or far, always in my heart. My Savior and King, He's the Nazarene. And then it just went on and on. We had all these verses about, like, traveling the long, dusty byways with the beggars and healing the lepers. And I gotta say, it was really nice. And I was just like, Lord, you know, I would just love to belong to this faith community. But I just can't make my head go there.
No. Dude, that is so experimental.
Yeah, we had a real good time. We also went to a rebel bar and played some kick-ass rebel songs. Yeah, this one, I got to do this one real quick. I'm probably imposing on you now. I just want to turn this into a concert right here, live on the air. Okay, I'm just going to do this one last thing. You might like this. But I said to my brother, I was like, maybe we got it all wrong. Maybe we're living in the wrong country. And not only the wrong country, but maybe like the wrong part of the wrong, right country. Maybe we belong down south. So we wrote a song and it kind of goes like this. Well, actually, I didn't even know there was such a thing as rebel bars. Okay, did you?
No, not
okay,
a clue.
Like, I've heard of like biker bars, gay bars, sports bars, but like I got this email from a lady and it was like, why don't you come down here and go to the rebel bar? We wrote the song and it goes like, it was the same trip and it was like, call me a traitor, you can spit in my eye, but I don't want to see no stars and stripes flying in my southern sky. Something wrong flag I love, and it's a good old southern cross. People say the Yankees won, but I say they lost, because the South will rise again. The South will rise again. The Confederacy in victory is the only way this can. The South will rise again. So we did like the whole thing.
Oh, I loved how you threw in a little Jack Black at the end there.
Oh,
that was
Lord.
Great.
It was great. But anyway, the next time you talk to me, I'll probably be down south, like handling snakes in a church somewhere. West Virginia.
Opening for the Blues Brothers with that cage in front of you as the beer bottles fly, man. Buddy, that was killer. Killer moment on the Drew Marshall Show with Tal Bachman, folks.
Let's go down there.
Let's keep it. Yeah, seriously, I would love to hang with you. That'd be a killer. Killer time. I appreciate your heart, man. I really do, Tal.
Okay, good luck, man.
Thanks, buddy. We'll talk soon.
See you,
bye. All right, bye-bye. Tal Bachman. Oh, man, that was too much. That was crazy. All right, short break, folks, on the show. And when we come back, we'll be speaking with Jennifer Knapp, Grammy-nominated recording artist who has got quite a story these days. Quite a story. If you haven't heard, well, we'll get it from the horse's mouth, so to speak, when we come back. I think I just called Jennifer Knapp a horse. My apologies. Have a listen to Tal Bachman. That's his killer song, She's So High.
Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca.